This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 183, I think. My work week quite hasn't finished yet. I am going to come in tomorrow for a little bit because I've got a project I'm working on that I didn't quite make as much progress as I would want. And there is a demo coming up for it, so I'm going to be taking care of that for a little bit tomorrow. And I actually have a little bit of breathing room now because I have ordered the beta copies of the last book in the Grumpy Old Prophets series. And I'm getting beta readers at this point, and that seems to be going fine. I think I'm up somewhere around 25 beta readers, and so that's going well. I should be sending out the beta copies next weekend. They're supposed to be in about the 3rd, which I think is Wednesday. It's Wednesday. The beta copies are supposed to be in, and so I'll probably be sending them out Friday sometime in there. So that's all good. Then, of course, the next big thing is I have to turn around and start putting out the books for actual production release. And so I'm going to be doing that while the other beta reading is going on. So that all seems to be going fine. I did get everything landed finally. And I grabbed a little time here and there while I was away with my wife on wedding anniversary. More on that in a moment. And so that's good. So we're all good there. Had a good week. A friend was back in town for a little bit, so we went to breakfast together and then had a chat with another friend on Wednesday night. Missed my Monday morning because I was out on wedding anniversary weekend. Missed my Saturday and missed my Friday mornings for the same reason. But I'm hoping to get caught up with them this weekend. So it was a good week. And then I also had a breakfast this morning with a friend. And just always enjoy getting together and chatting. Lots of interesting things to talk about. This last weekend was our wedding anniversary weekend. And we had a really nice time. We ran up to Kansas City for a couple of days, went up Thursday night, and we actually only drove part of the way. It's only like a 3-hour trip, so we certainly could have made the whole trip, but we were running a big process that Thursday night, so I thought, you know, we'll just go halfway, and then we'll see and make sure everything ran okay. And then we'll do the rest of the trip. So we did that, and we didn't get away till a little later on Thursday. So it was a real easy trip, and we had a chance to turn in early and, you know, then get up, have some breakfast, and head on in the rest of the way. On Friday, we ran by the Renaissance Festival on Friday, and it wasn't open on Friday. So we did something else. We, you know, finally decided on what hotel we wanted to stay at, and we actually booked our stay and got 2 free tickets to the Renaissance Festival, and so that kind of saved us some money. And we ended up staying at that same hotel on Saturday night as well, because we really liked it. And so that was interesting. Went to the Renaissance Festival on Saturday and met a lot of people, and then Saturday afternoon went up to a place called Parkville. I think it's Parkville, Kansas, or Parkville, Missouri. I don't know. It's right there on the line. Had fun time there. And then Saturday morning, after having breakfast at the hotel, Sunday morning, after having breakfast at the hotel, then we ran over to the Crown Center, and then we went ahead and came back on in. And then on Monday, we went out to eat. But in the meantime, my wife had a bunch of stuff that she had to get done for a project that she had to have done by tomorrow. And so she worked on that, and I got things finished up, got things uploaded, you know, got the book into beta, and got those things ordered, and blah, 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 blah. So I got all caught up with that. But it was fun. It was good. And one of the things that came out of all that, oh, on Friday we went to the Google store as well. After we got settled in at our hotel, then we ran over to the Google store, the Google Fiber store, and we saw the 1 gigabit internet. I posted on my Facebook a little video of the speed test that they did. It's just ridiculous. It's just 870 megabits down and 940 megabits up. It's just ridiculous. That's going to be in the home. So that was fun. But part of all that trip was, and the enjoyable part, frankly, of all of that trip was just getting to encounter people. Saying hello, sometimes that was all it was, sometimes it would turn into a conversation. Just taking a moment to relate to people, share our lives, and it was cool, it was fun. Did that quite a bit. Found out some really good things in doing that. Found out that Parkville was out there, so we went up there, and then later on Friday, you know, got in, of course, to a real fun conversation with the people who worked at the Google store, and then we ran up to a place called US Toys, and there was actually a lady there who temporarily lost one of her daughters in the store, and so helped her look for her daughter, and she found me later and said how much she appreciated the help and gave us a chance to chat a little bit. Chatted with the lady who was behind us in line at the U.S. Toys store and got a little more information about what would be fun to see in Kansas City. Just every time we turned around, Saturday morning, our waitress for breakfast was actually from the Philippines, and so we had a chance to talk about the Philippines a little bit, and that was fun. And when we went up to Parkville Friday afternoon, I struck up a conversation with an elderly gentleman that was there in the area for his 50th high school reunion, so talked with him for a little bit. And you know, every time we were turning around, there was someone to talk to, someone to share our lives with a little bit, and it was good. Talked to a guy that was picking up some dishes from room service on one of the floors, and he had gotten laid off from his job and had found this job, and this weekend was going to be his first weekend off, and so he was really happy, and so we had a chance to chat with him as well. And so it was fun. It was good. Good. And I'm going to come back to at least one of those little talks that we had a little later on. But on the way back, we did do the trip in one piece on the way back, and so I went ahead and powered up the TED Talks, and we listened to several TED Talks. One of them that we listened to that was really pretty interesting was called The Voices of China's Workers. It was by Leslie T. Chang. And she had gone over and spent 2 years getting to know some of the workers in China that are working at these factories that we all hear about. And she had some very interesting observations that really resonated with me, because having grown up in Asia, I have a little different perspective on things. I don't just take for granted all the things that we have available to us and believe that it is just my right to possess and own those things. And if I can't possess and own those things, that something must be wrong. And she started off talking about the fact that we have this idea in America, we have this narrative that when we start talking about the people who make our shoes and our handbags and our computers and our cell phones, that conversation is always a little bit laden with guilt, because we are imagining a farm girl who is coming into a city and she's making less than a dollar an hour stitching our shoes together, you know, or we hear about the young man who jumps off a roof because he's been working overtime to assemble our iPad, and we feel guilty about these things. And we pose the question, as is posed all the time, and pose the observation that there must be something wrong with a world in which a worker on an iPhone assembly line can't even afford to buy one. And so we take it for granted that the Chinese factories that these people are working in are all oppressive, and it's because we want cheap goods that we're forcing them into these jobs, that somehow they don't have a choice. And she made the good observation that we must be particularly self-obsessed to imagine that we have such power that we could force people into these factories, tens of millions of people, and to make them suffer. And she said, in fact, when you look at China, China manufactures goods all over the world, and it's been able to become to that level of prominence because it has low cost, it has a large and educated workforce, and it has flexible marketing systems that can respond quickly. She said, by just focusing on ourselves and our gadgets, we really reduce these individuals on the other side of the world, in her terms, into invisibility, as tiny and interchangeable as the parts on a mobile phone. And she said, when she actually went over there for the first time, she expected to find people who were morose and people who were just automatons and in horrible working conditions and didn't have any say and didn't have any attitudes. But then she started reading what some of the workers started telling her about their environment and their work. And these are all workers who are 18, 19-year-old young women. And this is how they feel about what's happening to them. One of them said, "My mother tells me to come home and get married, but if I marry now before I have fully developed myself, I can only marry an ordinary worker, so I'm not interested now. Oh, so I'm not in a rush." Another one said, "When I went home for the new year, everyone said I had changed. They asked, 'What did you do to have changed so much?' And I told them, 'I've studied and I have worked hard.' If you tell them more, they won't understand anyways." Another one said, "If I make a lot of money, it won't satisfy me. Just to make money is not enough meaning in life." Another one said, "Now, after I get off work, I study English, because in the future, our customers won't be only Chinese, so we must learn more languages." So what you find is you find that, in fact, people are coming to work in the factories for a reason, because that represents a path to them where they can make more of their lives than simply being on farms in the hinterlands. Even to the point, she said, what's interesting is you ask some of these workers what they do, and they're not really sure what they're doing. She said she talked to one worker, and she said something to me that sounded like Yuzi, and she thought it was a Chinese word, and she realized that the lady was actually saying QC in English, but she had no idea what QC stood for because she didn't speak English. So she was doing quality control on the line, but she didn't really know what she was doing. She was just doing what she was told. And the speaker said Marx would see this as the tragedy of capitalism, that the worker is alienated from the product of his labor, that he's not like a traditional maker of shoes or cabinets where they find satisfaction in it, that this worker in this industrial factory has no control and no pleasure and no true understanding in their work. But it's not really that simple, because this work provides an entry point for these workers to learn new skills. And they come and they work in these factories, and at night they study and they better themselves. And it's not really appropriate to simply calculate their worth and their value based on the products that they manufacture. Because she said that the normal way of looking at this in the West is, well, how long would it take for this worker to work and to earn enough money to buy the product that they're making? She said, for instance, an entry-level assembly line worker, it would take them 2.5 months' wages to be able to afford an iPhone. But she made a great observation, and she said, I'm not really sure that calculation is meaningful, she said, because I recently wrote an article for the New Yorker magazine. She said, but I can't afford to buy an ad in it. But she doesn't care, because she doesn't want an ad in the New Yorker magazine. Because what she produces, she's not that interested in buying something from there. And she gave a really great example of this. She said she went back home for the Chinese New Year with one of these workers, and the young gal gave her a Coach brand coin purse. Now, I didn't know what Coach brand is, but apparently it's an expensive line of women's purses and change purses and bags and those types of things. And she said she thought it was fake at first, just like everything else is in Don Juan. But she said after she got home, this young lady had actually given her mother a handbag. It was a Dooney and Burke, I don't know. And a few nights later, her sister was showing off a maroon Le Sports Sac shoulder bag. And these were actually authentic products that were made in their factory. And she said the lady's sister told her parents, in America, this bag sells for $320. And the little farmer mom and dad were just amazed at this. They couldn't. It sells for $320. And she said, and that's not all. Coach is coming out with a new line, the 2191, she said. And one bag will sell for $6,000. She said, I don't know if that's 6,000 yen or $6,000, but one bag, it will be $6,000. At that point, her boyfriend said, well, doesn't look like it's worth that much. And she gave a very apropos quote back to her boyfriend that I can't really repeat, but she said, she turned to her boyfriend and said, well, some people actually understand these things. You don't understand excrement. And she didn't use the term excrement, of course. So, but their relationship, the worker's relationship to these Coach bags is completely different than our relationship to these Coach bags. Because the bags weren't exactly worthless, but they were nowhere near to the value that Americans were willing to pay for them. Because this was just a product that they made. One of the things that I came away with living in the Philippines with was that in the Philippines, they would build knockoffs all over the place. Some of them pretty good quality. And you would get into situations where, like, if you were buying a guitar and there was no nameplate on it, and you would say, so what brand of guitar is this? And they said, oh, whatever brand you want, we'll just put it on there. You want Fender? Well, Gibson? We'll put it on there. They had the little nameplates, and they would just tack them on. Now, we can say, oh, well, it's not really a Gibson guitar then. But the fact of the matter is, I'm getting my mail. The fact of the matter is, while that may have been true in the Philippines, when it comes to factories in China, the things that are being produced there are really the real thing. I love Vibram five-finger shoes. I just love them. And I made the mistake at one point of buying some discounted Vibram five-finger shoes in much bolder colors than I could find on the Vibram site. Turns out they were knockoffs. When I got those shoes, it was in the same box that Vibrams come in. It had the same tags on them that Vibrams come in. They looked like Vibrams. Now, the material that they were made out of was a little different. And so I could tell it wasn't really Vibrams. But I'm backing into my garage. These shoes were probably made in the same factory where Vibram five-finger shoes are made. So now you get into all these interesting questions about, well, okay, so how is this worth, you know, $90 when I could buy these others for $55 or $60? Why? What's the value? And the people who are actually sitting there making these things, they know how cheaply these things are being made. And so they don't have the same valuation that we have on those things because they do not have the inflated prestige of them. And it's interesting, she said when she first met one of these female ladies who was working, she had just turned 18. She'd quit her first job on the assembly line of electronics factory. Over the next 2 years, she said, I watched as she switched jobs five times, eventually landing a lucrative post in a purchasing department of a hardware factory. Later, she married a fellow migrant worker and moved with him to his village, gave birth to two daughters, saved enough money to buy a secondhand Buick for herself and an apartment for her parents. She recently returned to the factories on her own to take a job in a factory that makes construction cranes, temporarily leaving her husband and children back home. In a recent email, she explained, a person should have some ambition while she is young so that in old age she can look back on her life and feel that it was not lived to no purpose. In other words, all these workers that we hear the horror stories about who are being overworked in horrific conditions, yes, according to our standards and according to the way we live in America, yes, yes, they are. But what's striking is that she said when you talk to these workers and ask them what they want, they don't say, I want better hot water in the showers, I want a nicer room, I want a TV set. They say, well, it would be nice to have those things, but that's not why they're there. What they care about is learning and growing. They're ambitious. And the factories give them a gateway to something else. And, you know, frankly, when I buy things and when I buy nice things, I buy those things not because I couldn't get along in my life without them. Of course I could. But I buy them because I like to reward innovation. And I buy them because we need to buy products in order for people to have jobs. And that includes people having jobs in China, moving up the economic ladder. That includes companies getting cheap goods from China that can be sold here in the United States. And people can be sales reps, and people can be marketing representatives, and people can be technicians who fix things. I mean, there's this whole huge economy that surrounds this cheap factory labor. And what we need to remember is that just because we wouldn't want to have 15 people in a room, which is what they often have in the housing, and we wouldn't want to share a bathroom with 50 people, that there are people overseas that those conditions aren't actually as bad as we would consider them to be, because the conditions they face back in their villages offer them no opportunity to grow no opportunity to learn anything, and no opportunity for their ambition. Their conditions back in their villages do provide a way of life from them that is fundamentally different than the factory. But some people decide that they do want to provide, you know, that they do want to pursue their ambitions, and so they should have a right to do that. And many, many do. She was talking about the fact it's 150 million, I think she said, 150 million migrant workers that are coming in China and working in the factories for a wide variety of reasons. But they aren't just robots and automatons. She said, I found young women who were smart and funny and brave and generous. By opening their lives to me, they taught me so much about the factories and about China and how to live in the world. And it's interesting because in our lives, there's always a mix. And I think one of the things that is important to understand about all of this is it doesn't really matter what your circumstances are, that you can find a way to turn those circumstances into a benefit for you. I was talking with the little Filipino waitress that we had Saturday morning, and we were talking about the Philippines, and she was commenting how that, yes, in the United States, you can make more money, but it's so much high pressure, where in the Philippines, there was not as much money, but she said, you know, everybody's real relaxed, and it's, you know, it's easier. She had come to the United States to make more money, but back in the Philippines, she said, you know, I never got gray hairs. And she said, I'm getting gray hairs here because of the stress. And the same thing with these workers, you know, whether they're working on farms, whether they're migrant workers and working in factories, whether they've moved their way up the factories, at every place you are, you really determine what your environment is. And we can, from our perspective, look across the pond and say, oh, that's just terrible what they're going through. But when we get over there and actually talk to them, they're doing that voluntarily because it gets them to a better place. And if we would all just decide, well, let's just boycott iPhones, let's just boycott this, that, and the other because, you know, they're so unfair to their workers, they wouldn't have any of those opportunities to do that. And so, you know, it's important in life. It's important in life to realize that our perspective is not necessarily the perspective of the rest of the people in the world. Now, that's not to say that there are not people working under horrific conditions around the world. We talked about that several weeks ago. There are. But just because people are working under horrific conditions, it doesn't mean that the whole content of their life is horrific. Because no matter what situation we find ourselves in, there is a way, through patience and kindness and optimism and attitude, to actually turn our situation into something that can bring us contentment. And that's what the Apostle Paul used to say. He said, it doesn't matter what my situation is, you know, whether I'm shipwrecked or saved, or he goes through a whole list of things there. He said, in all of that, I have learned to be content. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.